little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan.
Welcome to Thinking Clearly. This is a show about critical thinking and related topics. And my name is Bob Frelick, here with the other host of Thinking Clearly, Julia Minton. Hey, Julia.
Hi, Bob.
Let's kick it off as we usually do, Julia, by letting folks know how they can get in touch with us, give us information about how they liked our program and maybe ideas for future guests, that kind of thing, and how they can pop up our previously archived podcast versions of all our shows to listen to or download.
Absolutely. We love hearing from our listeners. In fact, we've actually made a number of shows based on suggestions from our listeners. So we love hearing from you, whether it's feedback or suggestions or anything like that. You can find us on Facebook, Thinking Clearly Radio. If you put in Thinking Clearly, it'll probably come up, and you will find promos posted on Facebook as well as show notes when the show is posted. All of our shows are podcasted, so you can find our entire archive by opening up your favorite podcast app and going to Add Feed and looking for Thinking Clearly. You can also visit our website, thinkingclearly.libsyn.com. That's LIBSYN.com. And again, our entire archive of podcasted shows are there. We've been doing this over 5 years. Is that right, Bob?
That's right.
Time flies.
It does. And I've enjoyed every moment of it. And it's been such a learning experience for me researching these topics. I almost read nothing else except things that are related to the kinds of topics, which are fairly broad, that we do on this show. A couple podcasts ago, we've mentioned the Braver Angels organization. And it's an organization whose stated mission is none other than to bring Americans together, to bridge the partisan divide and strengthen our democratic republic. Considerable undertaking in this day and age. And one of Braver Angels' co-founders, Dr. Bill Doherty, was our guest on episode number 57 of Thinking Clearly, when we talked about how to navigate political discussions with friends and family. And we're excited now to put the spotlight back on the work of Braver Angels on this edition. Julia, can you frame up the topic for our listeners?
Yeah, we're going to be continuing in the same vein on the topic of political depolarization and the work of Braver Angels. I'm sure it's a piece of cake that we will be able to understand in its entirety and figure out in this show alone. That was sarcasm.
Our guest, Kieran O'Connor, who has been with Braver Angels since 2017, and he heads up the marketing, digital, and communication strategy for Braver Angels, and is also one of the co-hosts of the Braver Angels podcast, which I've been listening to quite a bit and enjoying. And with a degree in public policy from Duke University, Kieran garnered some real-world political experience through his work as a staffer on the 2012 Obama campaign and the 2016 Clinton campaign. And he worked as a political consultant at Precision Strategies. Kieran O'Connor, welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Julia. It's great to be with you.
And it's wonderful to talk to you and to actually see you. Our listeners can't see you because we're radio, but now I can see your face. Listen to a number of your podcasts. Before we get started, I do want to remind listeners that we are pre-recording this interview, so there will be no listener call-ins for this edition of Thinking Clearly.
So thanks so much for joining us today. I think kind of start with some kind of foundational information. Can you let us know what Braver Angels does and how you got involved in the organization?
Sure. Well, at the very basic level, Braver Angels seeks to bring reds and blues together. That is to say, conservatives and liberals. The goal is to bridge the partisan divide and to give people an opportunity to better understand one another beyond stereotypes, to build trust, to clarify disagreements, and to find ways to work together when and where they can. The goal is not to change people's minds or have people necessarily meet in the middle to forge a centrist compromise. But the goal is to change people's hearts, to create a politics of goodwill and less rancor in this perilous moment for American democracy. The organization got started pretty much immediately after the 2016 election. Bob, you mentioned Bill Daugherty, one of the co-founders. He designed our first Red Blue workshop, which is rooted in family therapy practices, practices that Bill uses specifically to help couples who are engaged in difficult and sustained conflict in their marriages. And he believed that he could use some of those practices to help Democrats and Republicans better understand and communicate with one another in the wake of the 2016 election, which was bitterly acrimonious, as you all know. So that was the genesis of Braver Angels, a workshop in South Lebanon, Ohio. I got involved soon after. I had come off the 2016 Hillary campaign, and I wanted to find a way to better understand my country, not just necessarily fight the partisan battle to get Democrats elected, but to engage this deeper problem, the degeneration of America's civic muscle, the weakness that was not only threatening our democracy and our institutions, but destroying relationships between friends, family members, community members. And I wanted to do what I could to depolarize. And so I started helping out Braver Angels. We did a bus tour where we started doing more workshops and planting the seeds for what would become Braver Angels alliances, essentially local groups of liberals and conservatives who come together to engage and to work in this structured way to build out a working alliance, a citizens movement that can ideally remake our politics from the ground up in a culture of trust and goodwill and common purpose. So obviously a difficult task and the headwinds are stiff, but we've made real progress since we got started with that first workshop in Ohio. We've built out this movement of more than 10,000 active dues-paying members, over 75 local alliances, and expanded programming on college campuses, in communities, and increasingly within the large institutions that define American life, the media, academia, and politics itself. So there's a lot more I could say about the details of what we do, the opportunities, the challenges, but that's hopefully an initial primer on the story, the background, and the mission.
That sounds great. Now, let's dig a little deeper and get into some of those details, because there's a wide scope of different programs that are available and ways that you can improve your communication and practice some of these skills of civil dialogue and attempting to understand and find common ground with other people who have quite different opinions than you. Quite a few different ways you can get involved in doing that on Braver Angels. So run us through some of the programs that Braver Angels offers and what people who use the site can experience when they learn there.
Sure. Well, the first step for anyone who wants to get involved is to visit our website, which is braverangels.org. And there are lots of different opportunities and ways for people to get involved, whether they're simply curious or more deeply committed to this civic project. As I mentioned, we offer at this point many different kinds of workshops that are geared toward teaching skills, bringing people together, and helping people think about their own behavior in a political context and how they navigate conflict that's politically driven within their own life. And these workshops are happening regularly. We have multiple workshops a week. And since the onset of the pandemic, the vast majority of them are virtual. And so it's a relatively light commitment if you want to find a workshop to sit on a Zoom for 2 hours to talk, to listen, and to absorb the techniques that we've developed, whether that's a red blue workshop, which brings together a roughly even number of reds and blues, you know, 6 to 7 Democrats, 6 to 7 Republicans, who engage in moderated discussion. There are skills trainings that are designed to help you learn and practice skills for having constructive conversations across the political divide. There are issue-based workshops to help people talk about specific issues, whether that's climate change, abortion, gun rights and gun safety, et cetera. We also have a debates program, which is an opportunity for people to debate the issues, but to do so in a way that is rooted in good faith and rooted in an exploration of different perspectives. And that's not to say that it's not vigorous or contentious or provocative. We want our debates to reflect the strongly held and widely varied opinions of the American people. But we want to frame it in a constructive way in which people are participating in the debate to listen, understand, and be heard, rather than simply dominate, demonize, and dehumanize, which is unfortunately many of the characteristics that define political debates as we've been conditioned to understand them. As you mentioned, we also have a growing media presence for people who want to dip their toe and hear what these kind of discussions sound like and what they feel like. So people can check out the podcast, they can read essays and blogs, and people can go to our YouTube channel, because we have, at this point, over 100 videos that show the work of Braver Angels in action, and videos of past debates and discussions. And then, of course, if people want to get involved at the local level, they can find their local alliance. We make it fairly easy on the website to find your state coordinator and connect with people in your region. And we hope, as the pandemic recedes, we'll start to see more in-person gatherings. And we hope to have a national convention in the summer of 2022, in which we think about our work going forward and specifically how we engage political institutions and how do we take our work into the political arena and work with elected officials and their staffs to do what we've been doing at the grassroots level in terms of citizen-to-citizen depolarization. How might we affect institutional change and influence the direction of our country in a positive way?
That's great. I have to mention that a couple podcasts ago, with Julia's encouragement and therapeutic assistance, I admitted on air that I have begun recently, maybe within the last 6 months or so, lose patience. I've had in my life, a great deal of patience with other opinions and been able to accommodate those and engage in civil dialogues. But I reached a point at which it became difficult for me to keep my patience. And I found myself demonizing people and giving up on them and that sort of thing in conversations that I was having or interactions I was having with people, much more than I ever had before. Part of that, I suppose, is because getting into these issues, I realize how important it is for us all to make progress and find common ground as a culture. And partly, I guess, I was starting to get discouraged that there were people that just seemed they were putting walls up, weaponizing information. So I made a vow to become more active with Braver Angels. I mean, I've looked at the website, I've participated in a few of the activities there, and I want to endorse this for other people, that if you are feeling that impatience, if you are concerned about the schism that is ever widening, it seems, in this country, the polarization getting deeper, that Braver Angels is a place where you can get started in doing that. You can be a fly on the wall for a while and see what happens. That's probably a good way to get started. And you can become a volunteer. And then through a volunteer, you can kind of work your way up through that. But it does take practice. You have to have these kinds of skills that we talk about a lot on this show, and they have to become kind of routine for you. They have to be habits, and you will have times where your emotions start coming up and you need to know how to deal with that. And I think that's the kind of thing that Braver Angels offers some real experience with. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and I think it's important to acknowledge and recognize those emotions that we all have, the exhaustion, the feeling of being demoralized when you look at what's happening, the division's getting worse, and the potentially violent consequences are looming ever more acutely. And I think one thing that's important to realize, at least for me, is oftentimes that feeling of discouragement is rooted in a sense of helplessness. There's sort of a helpless anger or sadness that comes from observing what's happening to our political culture, our civic culture, and our social culture. But Braver Angels gives people, in small to big ways, a way to take action and to put their shoulder against the wheel in doing what they can to take civic action. And I think people find encouragement and energy in doing that. So I think the most important thing is to take that initial leap and see if it feels better to be involved in an active way rather than simply stepping back and bemoaning what's happening, you know, doom scrolling, as they call it, on your social media feed, which I'm certainly guilty of as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've talked about really just a wealth of resources that Braver Angels has and is continuing to grow. I mean, really, it's a very impressive list of resources. And there's been a couple suggestions here. You know, the podcast, I'm a fan. YouTube also is great to watch. For folks who are listening, you know, and also probably coming out of the holiday season, which we know is often filled with divisiveness and polarization for many people, where would you recommend they start if they want to know more about Braver Angels and getting involved?
Sure. Again, I would say go to the website and take a look at the What We Do section and see what interests you. I think if you're specifically looking for ways to better communicate with loved ones, we have a Families and Politics workshop. We have a new workshop, which is called Helping Loved Ones with Political Difference. And that's a workshop in which Bill will actually moderate a discussion between a pair of loved ones who are suffering from political disagreement, whereas the Families and Politics workshop is more about exploring skills for having those conversations. And the skills trainings, they apply in a wide variety of contexts, not just within the family, but also in the workplace, among friends, and on social media. We have a new social media e-course that's specifically designed to help people think about and improve the ways in which they communicate on social media, because so much of the polarization, the weaponization of information, as you said, Bob, is on social media. And we're excited about this new workshop that sort of takes aim squarely at the digital climate.
Kieran, are there certain topics that are so radioactive that they haven't been done on Braver Angels? Are there certain issues that you've turned down for debate or discussion?
No. In fact, after 2020, we held a debate that was focused specifically on voter fraud and voter suppression. And there were certainly a lot of pushback from people who said, why would you have a debate in which you're giving a platform to misinformation? We've had discussions, raw discussions on race, racism, critical race theory, vaccines. We have a debate tonight, Thursday, December 2nd, on abortion. And I imagine it will be a relatively raw and honest discussion, particularly given the fact that the Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday on the Mississippi case, which could result in a reversal of Roe v. Wade. So the short answer is no. And that's a part of our DNA, that we don't shy away from the most divisive discussions, because in order to depolarize, you need to engage the polarized. And if you limit your discussions to safe topics and you limit your participants to self-selected center left and center right, you're not going to really accomplish all that much. At least that's what we believe.
Do you have a process for selecting the topics that get up for discussion?
Yes, it's fairly decentralized and democratically run process. We have workshops and debates that are organized locally. So, you know, the Minnesota Alliance will put together a debate or discussion, and they'll decide within their alliance what they want to choose. And then we'll have national debates, for example, where we have a committee that's dedicated to crafting the resolution for which people will argue either in favor or opposition. And it's very much bottom up, grassroots. It's not like, you know, we in global headquarters are handing down the edicts that determine the nature and topics of the discussion.
Yeah, I really appreciate the diversity of topics on your podcast in particular. I work for a healthcare workers union, and I can't tell you how many hundreds of hours I've spent talking about vaccines with people of a variety of dispositions. Anyways, really appreciated the moderated conversation in the podcast about vaccinations as well. And really, I can see how this format is not exclusive to any particular type of topic. So I appreciate the kind of broadness and willingness to embrace all those things. I imagine too, you know, as someone who's worked on campaigns, but also, you know, in politically neutral environments, I imagine it's been a bit of a change coming from, you know, sort of a campaign atmosphere to this Braver Angels work. I'm wondering what, you know, are some of the important lessons that you've learned from this Braver Angels work, maybe things that surprised you didn't expect to or anticipate learning or experiencing when you did come into this work?
It's a good question. I think what's interesting about Braver Angels is that we do internally what we're asking the country to do. And our leadership is split 50-50, red and blue. And so those who work within Braver Angels are on their own personal journey of discovery and questioning. And for many, engaging for the first time in a real way with people on the, quote, other side. And that can be challenging, but it can also be rewarding because it broadens your perspective. And I believe also makes you a more effective activist and advocate for what you believe in. Because if you learn how to talk in a way in which you can be heard, if your goal is to persuade, then that will make you more effective at building trust. And once you build trust, that is where you can break through, so to speak. And I think, ironically, one consequence of polarization is that people fear that engaging with the other side is a weakness, a surrender, an abandonment of values. But I've found that it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to compromise your positions to engage across the schism.
And in a way, the same thing happens. This came from a therapeutic model, helping folks communicate better in a relationship setting. A facilitator of that or a therapist can understand what a client is doing in their life and understand the kinds of frames that the client is using to maybe rationalize that in their life. So in other words, can empathize with the person without agreeing with them. And it's entirely possible to do that intellectually too. I call it intellectual empathy. We can kind of translate that kind of empathy over. Empathy doesn't mean that we're agreeing. And it doesn't mean we're sympathizing. It means we're really understanding how that fits into the context of the person's life. So I really appreciate that part. And I do want to mention at this point, though, that we are talking to Kieran O'Connor, who directs marketing, digital, and communication strategy for Braver Angels, a nonprofit group whose mission is to reduce political polarization in America. Kieran, let's take a little deeper dive now and talk a little bit about the philosophical underpinnings of Braver Angels. When I was thinking about it, it seems to me that Braver Angels rests on a trust in the guiding principles of pluralism. I scanned the Braver Angels pages for that word, and I didn't see a lot of references to pluralism, but to me it seems like it's really based on this whole idea of pluralism, which we could describe as an affirmation of diversity within a political body and encouraging peaceful coexistence of different interests, convictions, and lifestyles. But as we all know, pluralism can turn into a free-for-all. So it seems to me that every communal experience that we have as social creatures has some sort of structure to it. And there's always a dynamic between how much of that structure comes top down, rules or codes of conduct and imposed from the top down, and how much comes from the bottom up, kind of created naturally from the people using it. So can you talk about how those dynamics pertain to Braver Angels?
Sure. That's a great question. And I'll also say that your remarks about empathy not equaling agreement or even sympathy, I think, are really well put and deeply resonant. I think pluralism is definitely at the heart of our work. We want to build a healthy civic pluralism within the United States. And a lot of the context of building pluralism, I think, has to do with the structures and processes that generate the output of pluralism. How is our democracy or our republic structured to translate the various wishes and positions and convictions of a diverse population into policy, into culture, and into who gets to lead and make the decisions for the people? And I think in a lot of ways, our politics are broken because there's mistranslation and there are all sorts of bastardizations of these processes that are meant to maintain pluralism and actually I think undermine it in some ways. And one big effect of that is that people lose trust and become cynical. And if you lose the buy-in of the population, then in a way pluralism no longer exists.
What kind of mechanisms do you have in all of the programs you have with Braver Angels? What kind of mechanisms do you have in place? Rules, essentially, codes of conduct, that sort of thing that come down from the top. That's what I'm looking for, is that balance versus what actually is building naturally from the people using the service.
Yeah, well, one thing that's important for our workshop is the ground rules that we set at the beginning and ask everyone to acknowledge and respect. One of the first and most important is that people are not there to change anyone's mind. They're there to express their own perspective and to listen to other perspectives. We also don't want people making ad hominem attacks, but we do want people to state freely and fully what they believe, regardless of how extreme other people might find it. In our debates, one of our ground rules is that people should state what they actually believe, because a lot of times in our debates, what we say is dictated by what we think will win, not necessarily what we actually believe. So yes, there are ground rules and codes of conduct, if you will, but they are more focused on process and which expectations we need to abandon and what style of culture we want to embrace, rather than dictates on what can be discussed and or what topics are out of bounds.
Now, on those debates, you do have, I don't think you call them a facilitator, but you have someone who is kind of directing the debate, right? What do you call that person?
The debate chair.
The debate chair. Now, does the debate chair act as a facilitator in that if a person is straying from the ground rules, that they will actually intervene or comment on that?
Yes. I think in general, the chair tries to be as neutral and not passive, but we don't want the debate to get interrupted, you know, every time somebody says something potentially objectionable. But the process of the debate is important. People observe how they make their comments. We direct people to direct their questions to other debaters, for example, through the chair. So, for example, Bob, if you gave a speech in favor of or in opposition to a resolution, and Julia was the chair of the debate, I would direct my question to Julia so that it's not a direct confrontation. It's sort of mediated in some ways. And so we have, structures and processes like that that are designed to make the conversation more open and constructive.
And what I'm getting at here is that there's discussions in different venues that about the issue that one of the things that looks like it may have happened is when the internet was first forming, I think a lot of people that were very supportive of the internet imagined the possibilities of a lot of different people coming together and exploring their own ideas and opinions, and we looked at it, at least I did, as in a very favorable, positive, optimistic light. But they also cherished the idea that there weren't a lot of rules, that it was an open, free forum, that there was not a lot of top-down, centralized direction. And there are people that I've heard discuss this idea that we found out what happened when you just have kind of a free-for-all with a lot of different people in a pluralistic setting, and especially when they have the option to become anonymous in what they say. And so there are people that are considering and looking at, for example, Wikipedia as a model of one venue where there are some rules and there are some moderation that takes place. Anyone can participate and edit a Wikipedia page, but there are mechanisms set in place that structure that to some extent. So that's what I'm getting at here, is how much do we need to rethink the amount of structure, whether it's top down or bottom up? I guess Reddit would be in one place where it's kind of bottom up, and in that well, Julie is shaking her head no, so I want her to chime in on this too. But this is the discussion I'd like us to get into just for a little bit here, is how structure, whether it's top-down or bottom-up, comes into play in this milieu that we consider the internet and networking.
Yeah, I think in some ways that's the million-dollar question. How can we design a digital architecture that incentivizes constructive engagement rather than destructive engagement? And the biggest platforms like Facebook especially are designed to monetize our attention and the kinds of content that, you know, fire up the parts of the brain that are triggered by outrage and fear and conflict are very effective at directing our attention. And so the content that tends to generate the most engagement is geared toward outrage and fear. And the companies make money off that and become more and more powerful, and those systems become more entrenched. But there are a lot of people out there who are trying to create different systems with different incentives. You mentioned Reddit. I think one thing that's interesting about Reddit is they have the upvote and downvote system. And so you can see sort of which comments and ideas and expressions have risen to the top as determined democratically by the users. You know, obviously, Facebook has a like button, but they don't quite have that same sort of up and down control that Reddit grants to users. But Julia, I saw you reacting to what Bob said about Reddit, so I'd be curious to hear your take on this.
Oh, well, I did react. I'm a fan of Reddit, but it's had some top-down censorship issues over the last many years. It is a great venue, but it is not what I would call bottom-up. It does have it's a very good platform that does evenly distribute somewhat, you know, user participation, I suppose. But there's a lot of history there we can talk about after the show, Bob.
Well, yeah, I mentioned Reddit, and I think there's some really good venues and there's some really bad subreddits. And I've always been a little wary of it because some of the things that have come out have been generated and started in Reddit and then went on to go viral and some of the negativity of that.
Yeah, well, I would actually, you know, to piggyback on this topic, you know, it is polarization really kind of what happens there, at least the history I'm thinking of, where there was a series of censorship that happened at Reddit, and the people who didn't like being censored went and created their own cesspools on the internet.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And that is exactly why, you know, we do need to find these ways. And Reddit does have some good models. The upvote, downvote is a very good way of doing that. But we do need to find models that don't create these cesspools and this is my word, of course, but by amplifying that polarization. At the same time, venues like Reddit also need to find ways to moderate their content to an extent so that it is responsible publicly.
So with respect to this, Kieran, it sounds like it's been pretty manageable for the kinds of mechanisms that you put in place, which are more passive, as you say, or kind of nudging people in a certain direction rather than trying to overtly intervene too much. So it sounds like it's been pretty manageable and that you haven't had a lot of issues with people who get off base, you know, off track, become trolls, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly had people who are angry or bitter or expressing their opinions vociferously. But in general, people are doing so in good faith. That is to say that they're not deliberately seeking to undermine the conversation or be a troll. You know, obviously, we've had certain isolated incidents, but it is really remarkable when people buy into the ground rules at the beginning. You know, just as humans have that capacity for negative tribalism, we also have that fundamental desire to bond. And even when people go into a conversation, you know, angry or suspicious of one another, building that human connection, even if it's over Zoom or Skype, tends to be very powerful. But once you remove that and you're simply trying to do it on social media, it becomes a lot harder because people are anonymous. A single troll can take over a conversation and people feel a lot freer to engage in that cynical bad faith behavior because there aren't really consequences. The social norms that govern are in-person and video chat interactions are not really there on social media. So it's a harder space to operate in for sure.
Yeah. And I know Julie has another question, but I do want to add this. When I looked up pluralism on Wikipedia, one statement that they made about it really stood out for me that I think is germane to what we've been talking about. So I want to read that. It goes like this. This is what Wikipedia says and includes as a statement about pluralism. It says, for pluralism to function and be successful in defining the common good, all groups have to agree to a minimal consensus that shared values are at least worth pursuing. And the most important baseline value is thus that of mutual respect or tolerance. If no such dialogue is possible, extremism and physical coercion are likely inevitable. So I thought that was a pretty good statement, hit on what we've been talking about and structure and finding common goals and at least have some common. And it goes back to, we had a podcast with Jonathan Rauch a few episodes back, and he has written a book, The Constitution of Knowledge, and he talks about pluralism and the need for groups that want to abide by the Constitution of Knowledge, that they share at least the common goal that it's worth listening to each other and trying to understand where that other person is coming from. And that can moderate and temper their behavior and their natural emotions that arise. And that plus whatever structure that we're able to, minimal structure coming from the top down that we're able to implement in the various venues that we use with each other, with the idea of the common ground that we have of trying to understand each other, forming the basis of a sort of a bottom-up approach, is workable, hopefully. That's where I'm looking at the changes, and it pretty much underscores what you've just said, Karen.
I was actually wondering if we could talk a little bit more about trust. It's come up a couple times as an important fundamental ingredient, I guess, if you will, in having these conversations, or at least improving our ability to have these conversations. So I guess I would kind of ask, you know, open-endedly, you know, what role does trust play in moving towards these greater civil dialogues that we would like to see in a meeting of minds?
Yeah, I think trust is a key ingredient in establishing the shared reality that we need to talk about difficult political issues. And from a epistemological perspective and the balkanization of media and the weaponization of information, people can't even agree on a basic set of facts. And that's because they don't share trust. How do I know information is true? It's not necessarily through just critical thinking. It's through trust, right? I mean, why do I believe climate change is real? It's not because I go out every day with a thermometer and take my own measurements and have established the data. It's because I trust the scientific consensus and I trust the sources of information that are relaying to me the scientific consensus. But if I don't trust either of those, then it's perfectly rational to question the existence of climate change. So the fact that social trust in these mediating institutions is declining makes it so much harder for us to engage in dialogue. And I think, Bob, you made a good point before about what are the conditions that have to be met in order for pluralism to survive and ideally thrive. And there does need to be a certain shared acquiescence to basic values. And that is threatened when people believe that the other side is illegitimate entirely because they've rejected the very premise of democracy. And, you know, when both sides, millions of people believe that the other side is stealing an election, for example, that makes it very hard to talk about that issue. And it does lead to violence because people feel like that's their only way to protect the values. And even while I think there are, you know, cynical politicians and elites who are stirring up conspiracy theories they know are false, I think lots of people are ironically invested in their positions because they believe they're the ones protecting democracy. They're the ones who are upholding these shared values that they don't think the other side shares. So there is a choice there between conversation and violence that people ultimately need to make. And so Braver Angels is trying to provide a venue for the former to avoid the latter.
Just a quick question. Do you have any sense of how well the experience of people who are, you know, diligently using the features of Braver Angels transfers over to positive new habits for them in other areas of their lives?
Yes, we've done fairly rigorous evaluation of our programming to measure the effect of the intervention. Essentially, we've done, you know, self-evaluation where people will express their attitudes going into the workshop and going out of it, and they show a meaningful reduction in what scholars term affective polarization. So the belief that my political opponent is not only wrong, but is fundamentally evil, bad, irredeemable, that we see a pretty remarkable reduction in those attitudes. And then we've also had a fair number of academic studies, you know, peer-reviewed work that's come in to measure these attitudes both before and after, and then, you know, further down the line, do people still feel less polarized 6 months after they participated? And then the other measure, I think, is how many people have not just participated, but have chosen to become members and volunteers and invested their time and money into Braver Angels. I think that really demonstrates a commitment to the mission.
Let's move to an idea of how values and worldviews come into play in the pluralistic Braver Angels environment. I mean, values and worldviews are one of the things that separate us a lot. And I've often gotten conversation with people, and really it comes down to a difference in the way, an overall difference in the way they're viewing the world, or an overall difference in values. Although sometimes I find that people who I agree with values with have different ideas of strategies to get to those values, and that creates a difference. But what's your experience, Kieran, with how values and morals and those kind of normative questions come into play in Braver Angels?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's really wide diversity in values among the American people, and there always has been, even if there are certain shared commitments to, you know, liberty and justice and equality in the abstract. The prioritization of those values and how they manifest in political positions varies dramatically among different populations. And some of Braver Angel's intellectual thrust draws on the work of Jonathan Haidt, who has developed a moral foundations theory in which he tries to understand what are the moral values that govern the worldviews of liberals versus conservatives. You know, when you're thinking about authority and sanctity and loyalty and justice and care, how do those organize themselves and which rise to the top based on people's disposition, their lived experiences, and perhaps even their basic genetics? I think a lot of these values are drawn from our very most basic emotional and biological impulses. And so I think it's important to realize that people have very different experiences and dispositions. And so it's natural for different worldviews to emerge.
On Braver Angel's podcast number 62, which I enjoyed, it's called Depolarizing the Media. You talked to John Gable and Nathaniel Barling, and they're co-founders of two different online news providers that attempt to reduce the extreme polarization that we've found in many other of the news sources. And in that conversation, John Gable seemed to express the opinion that new technologies like the printing press and the internet at first lead to much more misinformation and disinformation because they open the information streams to many news sources and increasing the pluralism. But that after people learn how to use that technology, the chaos of this information pollution will settle down. That was John Gable's opinion. And I'm interested really in your opinion on that from your experience with Braver Angels. Are we really going down that rabbit hole and need to deliberately impose more top-down and bottom-up structure to prevent our fall, or are we temporarily just caught in an eddy from which we'll naturally emerge?
I think it remains to be seen, and John's view is optimistic. I certainly hope that that happens. I think that the internet has accelerated things in such a way that this may be a different beast. I think when the internet was first getting popularized, a lot of people thought it would democratize information and lead to greater democratic and decentralization of power. And I think in a lot of ways, we've seen the opposite. We've seen backsliding, we've seen growth in autocracy and diminishment of social trust. So it remains to be seen. It's hard to predict. I think if you look at history, there's certainly that argument to be made, but it does feel like in some ways the internet is a different beast because it is so powerful that you basically have the ability to speak to the public. You know, anyone can become famous. Anyone's opinion can go viral overnight. And that's something that's different than the advent of the printing press or television and radio, which were fairly exclusive to those who had the ability to broadcast.
Well, we're getting close to wrapping it up. Kieran, would you like to say few words to kind of summarize for our listeners what Braver Angels offers and give us any words of wisdom that you'd like to impart?
Sure. Well, first off, my thanks to you, Bob, and to you, Julia, for having me on and for your interest in this topic. I guess I would just emphasize the stakes of what we're doing. In some ways, nothing could be more important if we want to survive as a country. And so I think people naturally understand the gravity, and Braver Angels gives people a way to act and to try to push back on the polarization that's been tearing the country apart. So again, I encourage listeners who are interested to check out our website at braverangels.org, and also check out our YouTube channel, which is a great way to watch videos of past events and also listen to the podcast, which is on YouTube as well as lots of streaming platforms like Apple and Spotify. So there are lots of ways to engage with Braver Angels, and I hope that everyone takes a chance on doing that.
Well, Kieran O'Connor, I want to thank you so much for sharing your ideas about bringing Americans together to bridge the partisan divide, and you're sharing your experiences with Braver Angels. And so on our Facebook page, we're going to post a link to Braver Angels. That's one word, braverangels.org. And are there any other links that you'd like us to post?
Just the YouTube channel would be great.
Okay, the YouTube channel. And if you go to Braver Angels, you can find the Braver Angels podcast as a link there. And I heartily recommend those to folks. I've been enjoying a number of them, going back to some of the previous episodes. Well, I want to thank our listeners. A big thanks so much for listening. And as always, Julia, thank you.
And thank you, Bob. And thank you so much for the work that you do, Kieran.
And until next time, keep thinking
clearly. Think for yourself, people. It's your first and your last chance.